Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, weary traveler. Need a short rest? Oh, I see. They said you'd be showing up about now. Come on, through the portal. Best not keep the Lore Mistress and Lore Master waiting. You know how they get.
Robots Radio presents the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. The best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio, and I will be your lore master for this evening. And I am joined by a voice that you may recognize, a voice that as soon as our Zoom meeting started, was like music to my ears, because I've grown very attached to this voice, and I will let them introduce themselves.
Hey, Sergio. My name's Russ Johnson, and I have a podcast, but I think you know me from my podcast that I had for years previous to this. That was the reading of the Legend of Drizzt books.
No, yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I came to know you. Actually, one of my DMs suggested you to me because I had a job at the time where I was able to listen to audiobooks more easily.
Right.
I've never been much of an audiobook guy. My mind wanders too frequently, and then I'll find myself, and I also do this while like reading a physical book too, but it's much more prevalent when listening to an audiobook. But my mind will wander and I'll think to myself, what did I just listen to? What the past 5 minutes? Why is this character killing this other character? What happened? What's going on?
What did I miss?
Right. But no, yeah, you are reading the Legend of Drizzt books, Legend of Drizzt series, for love of the game, really, just because you love the books. You have a talent for it. You have not to toot your own horn, but you have a knack for it. You have a great voice for it. And yeah, just for love of the game, which is what really appealed to me, because I definitely appreciate other folks who love D&D. Yeah. And love the worlds around it, the characters around it. You no longer do the Legend of Drizzt, but you have continued to do other stuff now.
Yeah, you know, it was a great journey, and it's kind of taken a turn, but it's moving forward. You know, I started listening to audio books this is going to sound bad, books on tape.
Hey, back in those days. You're preaching to the choir. I know what you mean.
You know, my favorite book on tape was actually Dragonlance, that was performed by Peter McNichol, which...
Nice.
I don't know what happened to it. I someone at the corporate level has decided they want their new person to do it, and you can't find his recordings anymore unless you're lucky to find. You can't find them online.
Right.
You could probably buy the cassettes on like eBay or something like that for a ridiculous amount of money. But he was so good. And that has stuck with me for years and years and years. And then, you know, I went on and had a life and raised kids and was a stay-at-home dad. And then after a while, it got to the point where the kids were old enough that I wasn't really having to do much. So I had always toyed around with doing voice work. So I started doing voice work and was getting small gigs here and there. And then I would see jobs come up for audiobooks. And I'm like, I cannot imagine how much is involved with an entire audiobook. I'm just going to try one. I'm going to try one. You know, The Legend of Drizzt Homeland was my favorite book in that series.
Start at the beginning.
Right. I mean, I realized Crystal Shard came first. Right. I'm not here to break down semantics, but I like Homeland. I prefer to start there. So I did. I said, I'm just going to start reading episodes and put it up there. You know, I've gained with the same group of guys, tabletop Dungeons and Dragons now for 20 some years. I mean, awesome. We've all had our kids grow up while we've been doing this. And they loved it. I said, dude, that was great. And so I said, I'm just going to finish the book. And what happens, happens. And I got to the end of Homeland. And by that time, I'd attracted a small listening base of people. And they liked it. And they're like, are you going to do Exile? And I'm like, yeah, why not? I like.
Why not?
Let's do Exile.
Yeah.
Let's do Exile. I did Exile. I attracted more people. They're like, you're going to do the trilogy? I'm like, all right. I'll do the trilogy. Let's do the trilogy. Twist my arm. I'm really having a lot of fun. I was the voices that I heard in my head, what I put onto the recordings. And, you know, I just, people were enjoying it. And that was enough for me. And I finished the trilogy. And then it just became, well, now there's this expectation of you're going to move on to Crystal Shard, right? And you're going to do the Icewind Dale trilogy. So, well, of course, I'm going to do the Icewind Dale trilogy. Why would I not, right? And so I finished Icewind Dale. And now I'd actually had a decent amount of people who were listening. And it was kind of neat. I'm not going to lie. It was fun. I mean, and you know, and before I started this, I did go to the Wizards of the Coast website. And I'm like, let me just look and see. I don't want to get into legal issues. And their policy seemed pretty straightforward and pretty open. Their intellectual property. If you give them complete credit for ownership of the property and you do not profit. And I did. I gave them complete credit. This is written by Salvatore. This is owned. It's the intellectual property of right. Wizards of the Coast. And I accepted no money. I had several people who had reached out to me. Hey, man, where can I support you? Where can I donate? Nowhere. It's copyrighted. I can't take any money. And so I didn't. You know, I did not take a dime. And it wasn't about that. It was really like people wanted to hear it. I enjoyed it. That was enough. And
love
so I
game.
Got, yeah, right. I got through book seven. And then I got like almost to the end of book eight. And I got the nice email from the lawyer, and to their credit, the lawyer, who is an independent lawyer, not Wizards of the Coast, they work for Wizards, but they're not like employed by them directly, I guess.
Like not in-house counsel.
Right. They're their own legal practice. And she was very cool. I mean, she wasn't like dropping the hammer. She's like, bottom line, you've got 1 week, everything's got to come down. And I was really blown away. It was 4 years of recording this project, and then it's just going to be gone. So I told people right away, I said, you know, do what you got to do. If you want to download the episodes, do it now, because my hands are tied. And it came down. Then I was left with this big hole, right? What are you going to do? You got to have to read something. And I had received so many book suggestions over the years that I really can't do, because they're all fantastic published fantasy novels that are all owned.
Right. Somebody else's.
But what happened was these floodgates opened up. Sergio, I can't even explain what it felt like. The outpouring I received, the number of emails, of messages, of voice messages, of texts I got from people who were just like, I can't believe that happened to you, man. I really, I'm sorry that happened. And there was like people really wanted more. But mixed in with that was this whole group of independent authors. And, you know, some of them were published. They wanted to get their work out there. Heck, it was out there. It was on Amazon, but people weren't buying it because these guys aren't marketers. They're not going to spend their entire times, you know, selling this book that was a passion of theirs. So I said, all right, well, let's do this. Let me take some independent work, and I've been given consent by the owner, and let's record it. And so that's how it started. So now I have finished one book called Toothless by a guy who is a great writer. The book was met with some mixed reviews from the listening base because it wasn't directly fantasy. And I think people really, really wanted that fantasy edge. But he writes well. And I really enjoyed the change of direction to kind of see how things went. The book was great. I enjoyed it. And then I started another fantasy book that I'm doing right now called Bloodborne, which is just like reading a tabletop adventure. It reads like you're following along with the group of people as they go in their merry way and fighting the bad guys and seeing how things all play out. So it's great. This what Wizards of the Coast did was they allowed me to establish this beautiful online community, this Discord server that has nearly 500 people on it now. I've got writers, I've got artists, I've got independent game designers, I've got foodies. They're all gamers, they're all lovers of fantasy, and the foodies is like the biggest draw for people there. That channel on my Discord gets posts every day. Every day, people are posting about their food. So it's been a long, fun ride, I'm not going to lie. And I am happy that it's still going. And I really absolutely appreciate you reaching out to me and inviting me to come on here and talk about these books that are just, you know, in my lifeblood. You know, so many people love this series. And for me, it's my favorite fantasy series. And, you know, I dig it. And a lot of people dig it too. So I'm glad we're talking about
Oh no, yeah, absolutely. You
it.
mentioned a bunch of people reaching out to you once like the hammer was dropped on the Legend of Dritz recordings. I was one of them. I wanted to be like, hey, like let's get you on the show. My only issue was that it took longer than expected, but we finally got you on here to talk about the legacy of the Drow series. We're going to start off with the Legacy of the Drow book and then go into Starless Nights. But yeah, like you said, like you mentioned in your head, you think when you hear Dragonlance, you hear Peter McNichol's voice.
Yes.
And for me, like I said, I wasn't much of a audiobook fan or a connoisseur growing up. It wasn't until I started listening to your recordings, and so forevermore, Dritz will have your voice in my head, and I'm sure that'll be like that for a bunch of folks. In fact, on our own Discord, somebody said like, I don't know how y'all feel about promoting other people's stuff, but there's this other thing. There's someone's recording these, and I thought it's cool. I was like, oh, you mean Russell Johnson? Yeah, you can promote the hell out of his stuff here. Like, yeah, we're fine with that. Like, promote everyone's stuff. Everyone who's doing good work and is treating other people with kindness deserves to have their stuff promoted. And so as a result, that is why you are on this show, good sir.
You know, it's funny. One of the people that I did speak with after everything kind of went down, and after the community was established, and I had kind of found my pace where people had joined and established who they were on the Discord and such. I reached out to Salvatore. I had corresponded with Salvatore throughout the years, mostly at the beginning to kind of get his blessing. Can I do this? Is it okay if I do this? And, you know, he was really cool and like, look, I don't own the books. They're owned by Wizards of the Coast,
He's
so
like,
I
I didn't
can't
write
give you
him.
permission. Right. I just write them. So, but he is one of these people that will respond to everybody that emails him. So he wrote back to me, and this we corresponded a little bit back and forth. He's a D&D gamer, and he likes to he loves to play. He's played with the same guys for years, and so we had some similarities there. And then I reached out to him not too long ago, about 2 months ago, and I said, "Hey, I just want you to know what's happened." I said, "Because of what has happened, and because of your books, this community has been established. I have been able to help some people, some independent writers, get their work heard. And so it's not huge. It's like a microcosm, but it's happening. It's very grassroots. It's very organic. People are enjoying learning about these other books. And it's really thanks to your mind. It's thanks to your creation." And he wrote back and he was incredibly gracious. He said a lot of people actually reached out to him when my podcast took that hard right turn from Wizards of the Coast, which kind of blew me away. I did not know that a lot of people had reached out to him directly. And he had very kind words about my treatment of his work. And he says, "You treated it very ethically. And, you know, I can't thank you enough for how you did your thing." And I was blown away. I was almost in tears. I was showing it to my wife. Awesome. I was showing it to everybody else. I'm like, "Look at the, look, it's Salvatore." But yeah, it's great. I'm just happy. I'm just happy to do this. Honestly, I enjoy it. I'm learning these new stories. I've met so many unbelievable people, and it's been a fantastic experience. And I hope I never run out of material from independent writers who are willing to trust me with, you know, their lives blood, their hard work. You know, if I can help them somehow. And if anyone knows Peter McNichol, if anybody out there knows Peter McNichol, I just want you to tell him thank you. That's it. I don't need much. Just tell him thank you, because
just thanks.
I swear to God, I wish everyone could hear that Dragonlance audio. It was fantastic.
Now I'm going to be on a hunt to find it down.
Yeah, good luck. If you find it, let me know.
Absolutely, 100%. So without further ado, however, we're going to jump into the Dritz books. We're going to talk about the legacy. So this book opens up in Menzo Berenzin and Denon Duorden. This is Dritz's brother, who, since the extermination of the Duorden house, he has fallen in with the mercenary group Bregendarth, which is headed by Jarl Axel. So he's kind of a houseless drow doing the whole mercenary thing. Jarl Axel is a fun character. Jarl Axel is one of those characters that definitely changes and throughout the course of this long saga. And we start to see that a little bit here. At first, he's sort of almost like a deus ex machina in the first couple of series. And then he sort of comes into his own agency. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a little bit. So Jarl Axel, he has sent for Denon, who was on a sabotage mission, one that he's been on for about a year. Jarl Axel kills a kobold spy who has snuck into their base on behalf of one of the most powerful drow houses, and they get to business. He reveals Denon's sister, Vierna, in her House Duorden robes, which is a big no-no, because Duorden is persona non grata after what happened with Dritz, or rather what didn't happen, which was his, you know, capture and death. Loth has removed her favor and the house was exterminated. But yet Vierna, seeming a bit, I'm going to go ahead and put it bluntly, seeming a bit insane, a bit kooky, claims she has regained Loth's favor and has been shown, quote, the way. And the traitor, Dritz, must be found and killed. So that makes up the crux of this plot, is Dritz's sister and Dritz's sister's crew, her posse, trying to do just that. So Denon rightfully brings up that their mother, Matron Malice, tried to do the exact same thing. And as a result, that's why they're in the situation that they're in. You know, house is exterminated. The only thing that, you know, she is absorbed into another household. Denon is now a houseless mercenary. But the mercenary drow only eats a jolt of magical energy, which slams him into the wall for his trouble. Vierna is not trying to hear any sort of dissent. You know, he's made to kneel and agree with his apparently insane sister. And Jarlaxle, for his part, entertains this idea. He loves it. But for him, you know, conflict means money, right?
Well, yeah, he is the ultimate
opportunist.
Piece of chaos. Yeah, he's the opportunist. He's the chaos. I mean, he really is that writing device that it doesn't have to have explanation. He, you know, Salvatore uses him in so many ways. If Jarlaxle needs to have a magic item, boom, all of a sudden Salvatore gives him a magic item that's necessary. And, you know, he has established such a reputation that people don't even know if half the magic items he have are really even magic items, or they're just facades, fake.
Right. And speaking of magic items, he gives one, an earring, to a human. At this point, is unidentified, which apparently acts as a sort of tracking device, a sort of GPS.
Did he say human? I looked at the notes on that. I couldn't remember if they specifically said a human, or they identified it more vague, like an unidentified agent.
Right. I can't remember, but I mean, anyone who's reading this is thinking, like, that's got to be Artemis. It has to be 100% Artemis.
You want it to be, but
at least maybe, and maybe
know,
that,
not sure.
That maybe that was my hopes, you know, pinning into the notes. So it warms when close to Drow, and then that can be felt back by Virna back in the Underdark. So obviously, once the agent or the human gets to Dritz, you know, his siblings and Jarlaxle will know it. And so a plan is hatched involving a goblin horde, the dwarves of Mithril Hall, the chaos that will ensue when the two shall twain, and, you know, killing Dritz all in the midst of the chaos of it. Which, it's, I mean, for a normal person, normal humanoid, that's might seem like let's take this guy out in the middle of this chaos, but for someone like Dritz, I would think they would want a better plan than that.
This one is a really bizarre book. I mean, there's so much that goes on in this book. So many tumblers are in motion on this. But yeah, I mean, you're right. It is kind of like that's the plan. That's what we're going with. Okay.
And we see exactly why the plan isn't as foolproof or as thought out as we would think it'd be. We see why at the end of it, once everything comes to the surface. But meanwhile, on the surface, Dritz and Caddybury reacquaint themselves after the Drow has returned from Silvery Moon. And although she is due to be wed to Wulfgar soon, Dritz senses that something is off about her. So Dritz makes his way back to Mithril Hall, meets with Brunner and Regis, returns almost immediately after, and it's basically the epilogue that we see from Halfling's Gem. Regis shows up out of nowhere, claiming it's for the wedding. Brunner and Dritz have some suspicions as to how he would have even heard about it back in, all the way in Kalimport. And so they think he's in some sort of trouble.
Yep.
Which he absolutely
he
is.
Was.
The dwarf's general Dagna informs Brunner of newly discovered mithril veins, but there is evidence of goblin activity there. Everyone is eager to go in and get some goblin slaughtering action going on. Everyone except for Caddybury, who rightly reasons that the goblins haven't yet hurt anyone, so why the eagerness to cut them down? And this is a great example of Caddybury's humanity, you know, her sense of justice and fairness in the face of, you know, obviously even her father figure and everyone else going in a different direction. She's willing to stand up and speak her mind to what she thinks is right.
She is gone through a lot of changes, obviously, in the books from Icewind Dale, from the Crystal Shard up until now. And, you know, after everything she's gone through, she's not the same. She's seen blood. You know, she has toughened up and she's developed into her own warrior. She is a force to be reckoned with, and some people have problems kind of, some people in the book have problems kind of accepting that maybe and getting their heads around it.
Right. Tritz sees her point, and to their chagrin, as do the dwarves. But Wulfgar, to your point that some folks aren't exactly happy of about Catabree's character arc, Wulfgar's pretty rude about his displeasure. And he and the drow have this weird sort of tense stare down that doesn't go unnoticed by Brunner. Brunner realizes something's weird between his future son-in-law and his drow friend. And that stare down leads to a all-out fight between the two later that seemingly comes out of nowhere, but is explained later on. When this happened, I thought Wolfgar was possessed by something or someone. He absolutely tries to kill Dritz.
I mean, Salvatore started leaving the breadcrumbs about the way Regis was behaving. And then he throws in this behavior of how Wulfgar is, reverted back to kind of like this, Wulfgar smash,
Right.
kind of mentality. And you're like, all right, something's going on. And you've read the previous chapters, and now you've got an agent, and you're trying to put it all together, and you want it to all fit together, but he hasn't said this is what's happening. And so you think you know what's going on, but you're not really sure. But yeah, Wulfgar is definitely not the same as we have seen him in any of the books.
He seems like a man possessed, attacking his longtime friend,
Yeah.
former teacher. The anger finally subsides enough, but to stop the conflict. But Dritz worries more that it's more than just Catabree's willful personality that's causing Wulfgar to act this way. Meanwhile, the dwarves and their friends do indeed make their way to parley with the goblins, but. To Catabree's chagrin, the goblins have no intention to talk and have set a trap for them. Fortunately for this trap, while it's clever for goblins, it isn't too hard for Dritz to suss out, and they Guinevere is able to neutralize it. The goblin horde then is easy pickings for the dwarven force, and they have this thing called a rolling monstrosity. The juicer, they called it because they
Juicer,
crush
yes.
goblins to juice. Which it's been a while since I laughed out loud reading a Legend of Dritz book, but that one got me. The juicer is classic.
Yeah, I mean, they don't do a lot of the construction, kind of the building aspect in these books. Now we've got these the class, all of a sudden I'm blanking, the artificer, right? That
Right.
is the builder. You've got guns, gunpowder, and you've got mechanics now in D&D. And so this is kind of prior to that, where you've got this essentially this dwarven powered mechanical device, this rolling pin of death that
Right.
takes up the entire hallway, and yeah, just grinds up goblins into nothing and just spits out sinew and blood and just pieces, which yeah, visually that would be amazing. I mean, that'd be like watching a Saw movie, right? One of these highly gory films. But he writes it so well, and he spends a lot of time writing about it in those chapters. I think it was in two chapters it carried over from one to the second. So he really enjoyed that chapter, I think.
Yeah, Salvatore's battle sequences are chef's kiss,
Fantastic.
100%. Even Regis himself gets a kill, but in all the excitement, no one notices a second drow sneaking about, learning dwarven battle techniques. Meanwhile, back in Menzel Berenzin, Fiorna reveals to her brother the full extent of her plan. She's going to deliver Dritz to Loth and then invoke the Rite of Accusation. This is basically where the nobles of a downed house show up and say like, oh, nope, didn't get all of us, which is a huge no-no for Loth. If she's like, if you as a house are going to attack another house, you need to make sure that they're all dead, which I couldn't exactly figure out how that worked. I mean, obviously Vierna was absorbed into another house,
yeah,
and Denon became a mercenary. I guess if they have the stones to try to invoke that, they can. But for the most part, if that's, you know, that's how it works in the Drow society, if you leave any surviving members behind, then your house is then up for extinction, up for, you know, for dismissal of Loth's favor. But so she will invoke the right of accusation, and then she will, for some reason, be placed atop House Banray, the first house, rather than the eldest Banray daughter, Trail. Again, facets of this plan, facets of the idea don't seem to make a whole lot of sense. Even Dinan is a bit confused by how none of it makes a whole lot of sense. And so you can kind of start to see that it might not be as clear cut as what Vierna is presenting it as.
Or Dinan,
right. Like, yeah, he's, and it gets worse for him.
Yeah, he's confused. And I think the reader is also confused because you're like, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense with everything we've read in the first books. How the heck can you pull this off, right? I think that's why he's just kind of like, well, I can't deny that she's got power. And there's only one way she's going to get power, and that's through Loth. So something is clearly going on, but I don't have to understand completely all the semantics behind it.
Right. And so Trill seems to be the one behind this. She's convinced Vierna that this whole plan was Loth's desire. And it's really just a way to either A, get rid of Dritz, B, get rid of Vierna, or C, maybe both at the same time. Regardless, the power that Vierna now wields is real because she does something only a high priestess of Loth could do, which is changing her brother Dinan into a Drider, which we will discuss. We'll go into the Drider lore in the Patreon Plus installment for this episode. but it's, yeah, when you say poor Dinan, this, I can't imagine a worse fate.
Well, you know, it's like you see them in the game and over the time in the lore, and it's almost like they're kind of these cool looking monsters and maybe a little bit glorified to a subtle degree until you read these books. And Salvatore really took it upon himself to say, no, this is really not a good thing at all. They are really these mindless, bloated slaves, unwilling to be transformed this way. You know, you become this sexless, mindless killer that just exists to have the whims of the hierarchy carried out. And so it's miserable. It's a miserable existence.
Yeah, absolutely. I think fourth edition changes it from a curse into something that is sort of a blessing, something that a drow would like to have happen to them. And then that obviously got changed right back in fifth edition because, like, yeah, who would want that? And I can understand, like, yeah, I mean, like, if, I mean, Loth, you know, we have a t-shirt that you can get on Redbubble. We have links in the show notes of Loth. She looks awesome. She looks fantastic. But the Driders themselves, like you said, are just these mindless, bloated monstrosities that are essentially just cannon fodder and shields. You know, they have no sort of agency. They have no sort of power over themselves. And Salvatore really gets into it with Din and describing his face, how it looks sunken and drawn, and just it's
I mean,
beautiful.
He was a refined fighter. I mean, he was excellent. He was a fantastic fighter. He went through the academy and he was one of the masters there, and he trained well. And yeah, he couldn't beat Drizzt, but he was still a top notch fighter. And all of that skill and prowess is gone. Now he's force. He's just muscle. That's it. And it's like, wow. What an amazing, just complete change and dissolution of who he was.
Meanwhile, back at Mithril Hall, Brunner is stressing out over his daughter's wedding planning. A report of missing dwarves causes Dritz to go investigate alongside Regis, who is noted as wearing a single earring. Interesting.
About that.
And sure enough, it is the magical earring that Vierna gave to the unnamed agent as a tracking device. And so, obviously, Dritz and Regis are being led into a trap. And if you're wondering who that unnamed agent, that unnamed human was, well, Regis happens to mention his guild in Kalimport was taken from him by none other than Artemis Untrary. And Regis also theorizes that the assassin isn't done with Dritz as much as the drow would hope. They do eventually find the missing dwarves, their bodies slashed open, left to rot, food for carrion crawlers. But examining the bodies, Dritz realizes that the dwarves were victims of drow, and before they're able to start doubling back, they are attacked. Drow warriors, driders, including one who looks very familiar now, descends upon them, but by the hair on their chin, they manage to escape. A callous remark from Regis, referring to Gwenyver as, you know, a mere magical item,
right,
finally unlocks the truth for Dritz.
Yeah, because Regis has a very personal relationship at this point with Gwen. You know, she has
saved him
a couple of times. And now he says it'd be a shame to lose such a, you know, such a powerful magical item. And yeah, that's like, wait, what? She's not a magical item.
That's
Gwen.
Our friend.
She's
that's
an
our
entity,
homeboy.
right? She's one of us. So yeah, that you're right. That was definitely like the last straw.
Regis removes a mask, the same mask that Dritz used to appear as a surface elf previously, and reveals himself as Artemis Untrary. Ha 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 ha. It's that I was not expecting. I thought when I first read this, I thought that Artemis had given the earring or had, you know, somehow gotten the earring to Regis and then was tracking him. Did not think that Regis himself would end up being Artemis Untrary, which was it was a good plot point. I like that. Like, good
well,
twist.
Drizzt even points out, he says, he didn't know that when he used the mask himself, that it could do what it did. You know, he put it on and it just changed his physical skin and coloring. It didn't adjust his clothing.
Height, weight, clothing.
And Untrary kind of says, you know, hey, you know what? You need to learn more about magic items because that mask can do a heck of a lot more than what you were using it for. And kind of says, ha ha, you're right. Ha ha.
Back in Mithril Hall, the companions also figure out something's wrong since it was, quote, Regis using his magical ruby to persuade Brunner to send him along with Dritz to find the missing dwarves, which again, didn't make sense. Like, why Regis would rather, you know, sit by the fire and eat a bunch of food than go out into these dark and disgusting caves and look for possibly dead dwarves. And in fact, the reason Wolfgar was so hot with Dritz was because, again, quote unquote, Regis told him that he saw the drow and Catabri smooching upon the dark elf's return. And it takes Wolfgar longer than this realization, longer than this sort of reveal to figure out, oh, I was lied to. That actually didn't happen. In fact, Brunner, like, upset with Wolfgar because he's being so stubborn with Catabri, but I couldn't help but laugh at Wolfgar's sort of ignorance at this.
Yeah.
But he reveals this later during the search, and everyone basically calls him an idiot for not connecting the dots, which, to their credit, I mean, Wolfgar is still a bit of he's a barbarian, you know.
Yeah.
Intelligence is the dumb stat.
You're right. I mean, he is, you know, at the gene pool of barbarians, he's definitely at the top end for, you know, getting a clue in overall, because he does figure out some things to change the lives of all of the people in his tribes and to their betterment.
Right.
But yeah, he's, you know, still learning about the ways of the world. And yeah, he's not up there with the skills of Artemis and Regis and Drizzt and even Brunner.
And so Dritz and Artemis Untrary reignite their duel, but both are felled by poisonous drow darts. And Dritz, slipping into unconsciousness, hears a voice that he hadn't heard in decades. Dritz comes to and realizes his sister Vierna has captured him. His brother is now a drider. And Artemis is in league with some devilishly handsome drow with a killer fashion sense. I love how much of a dandy Jarlaxle is.
Well, that's one way of putting it. The killer fashion sense. He's a trendsetter.
Dritz is given the rundown on what's happened to his family since he left Menzo Berenzin, while Brunner, Catabri, and Wolfgar and the others begin to search for their drow friend. They manage to find him, dueling with Untrary as per the assassin's request in aiding Vierna, and they cause enough of a distraction for Dritz to escape. His friends are beaten back by the drow forces, however, and each party knows not the status of the other. Essentially, at this point, everyone is looking for everyone else. Untrary kills his drow escorts in order to once again find Dritz alone, and is able to kind of bait Dritz into fighting again by using Regis as bait. He's like, hey, like, if you don't fight me, you're never going to find out where your friend is. And so they battle, but once again, they are found by several more drow who they end up dispatching together, which is, I feel this is the start of, and not to get too far into Entreri's character arc, but I feel this is the start of the turn for him when he and Dritz, I mean, when they fought together in the Icewind Dale trilogy, it was for right. survival. It was to, you know, it was to, for mutual benefits. In this case, they're doing it. I mean, obviously Dritz wants to survive, but Entreri wants to fight Dritz in the manner that he sees fit. And so I think this is where he kind of starts to turn a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that this is the start of his new arc. Yeah.
And so they take care of the drow, and somehow Entreri escapes for seemingly no reason. Meanwhile, Vierna, Jarlaxle, and Dryder Dinan come upon Brunner and company. And in this battle, Puent, if we haven't talked about Puent at all, he's a secondary character in the book, but he's awesome. He's when you think of secondary characters, they either should be memorable or just kind of move the plot along, or both in right. the best case scenarios. And Puent is both of them. He has this armor that's just spikes, essentially. And so he just runs into the things that he's fighting a lot of time and slashes them up, which is fantastic. Unfortunately
right.
for him, he falls into a pit. Wolfgar, it gets ensnared by a Yokel and collapses the ceiling above them, seemingly sacrificing himself to destroy the creature. Untrary finally lures Dritz into the duel the assassin has long been obsessing over, and they battle, but even at first, with Dritz's skill slowly gaining him the upper hand, they're even at first, but Dritz's skill slowly gains him the upper hand until Untrary ends up falling down the side of a mountain. Meanwhile, Brunner, Catabri, and the rest of the dwarves from Mithril Hall lock horns with the drow force and defeat them in battle. Dritz has recovered Regis at this point. They link up with Puent and they take on Vierna and Jarlaxle. Any advantage that Dritz's sister and the mercenary leader may have had is now nullified once Brunner and Catabri join the fray. And Dritz kills his sister, but Jarlaxle, although injured, manages to escape, which Dritz had made a promise, made a vow that he was not going to kill another drow. He ends up breaking the vow halfway through this book in his attempt to escape. And he has one of the Tao of Dritz, you know, those little...
He's an epiphany.
He has an epiphany, right? And that making that vow doesn't do anyone any good, especially if, you know, is he not going to protect his friends from drow? Is he just going to stand aside and let that, you know, let them get hurt because of this vow that he made? And he even says, like, why drow? Why not anyone else? Like, why did I not make that vow for anyone? Why, you know? And so I feel like he obviously is now not fine with killing Drow, but will take the necessary steps when confronted with himself or, you know, with, you know, his friends meeting harm.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And you know, it's he even admits to himself that when he kind of made that pledge, that promise, that I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to strike down any more drow. You know, this I did that to survive, to escape, and it has consumed a part of me. And he's gone through this evolution, and he has met different people, and he has been educated in certain things, and he has been guided by the likes of Montaleo and Sojourn, who's very black and white with, like, why would you feel bad about killing goblins? They're evil, for example. You know, this is, they're going to be evil. It's what they do. And he meets these other people, you know, the Wulfgar and Brunner and Caterbury and everyone else. And he does go through a transformation. And you're right. Why Drow? Why should he keep Drow alive when he's not really like they are at this point? He's a different entity altogether. And he realizes that that pledge was really doesn't have the same meaning that it did back in that time.
No, yeah, 100%. And so the companions of the hall are victorious, but it's bittersweet as they mourn the loss of Wulfgar. Consumed by both sadness and anger, rage, Regis finds Untreri following the assassin's fall and takes all of his magical possessions and leaves his former kidnapper to die where he is. And the book ends with... Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I just... Oh, I mean, you knew. You knew when he did that, why he did that, but I was like, come on, this is your chance, Regis. He cut off your finger. He has mentally beat you into submission. He has done so many things to you. And Regis is not one to shy away from killing if necessary.
Right.
And it surprised me. And it was almost like, hey, this is a tool that we're going to use to keep this character going. And we don't want to kill him off. But at the same time, I'm like, this is Regis. This is your chance to kind of take back all the power to end it. It's done. You win. But he didn't. He figured, he'll die. He'll die. Right? What could possibly save him?
Well, we'll find out what saves him here at the after the middle of the show. But the book ends with the stunning revelation that Machen Mother Ban Ray has been behind the plot the entire time as a means to take over Mithril Hall. Hunting for Dritz was just a ploy to gain intel on the Dwarven Kingdom and its forces in a bid to conquer it alongside the magically imprisoned Gandalug Battlehammer, the first king of Mithril Hall.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which is a hell of a cliffhanger. 100. I love it. It was fantastic. But yeah, we're going to jump to the middle of the show. We'll do all the middle of the show stuff. And when we come back, we are going to discuss Starless Night. Hey, it's the middle of the show, middle of the show type stuff. Like, thanking you, the listener, thank you so much for supporting the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast by listening. If you want to support the show in other ways, you can leave us 5-star reviews on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on all the different social medias. You can join the Discord. You can sign up at our Patreon over at patreon.com/dndlorecast and sign up for one of the cool tiers that we have there with a bunch of cool benefits. Just any number of ways to support the show, any number of ways that you're comfortable with. We appreciate each and every one of them. And of course, links to everything that I just mentioned are going to be in the show notes. In terms of D&D news, not a whole lot. Biggest news recently is that Larian, the developers behind Baldur's Gate 3, have announced they will not be returning to make a sequel, which is disappointing because Baldur's Gate 3 was fantastic game of the year, obviously, and will definitely be looked upon as something as sort of a benchmark for future D&D games. And so they have said, they being Wizards of the Coast, said they are being careful as to future projects. They don't want to just, you know, license out the IP all willy-nilly, all William-nillium, because Baldur's Gate 3 has won a lot of goodwill over for that sort of thing, and so I don't want to squander it. So that is comforting. You know, that's definitely a step in the right direction. You know, I'd rather have one game like Baldur's Gate 3 than have a dozen games like Dark Alliance, which, you know, Dark Alliance wasn't awful, but it was just fine, you know, and it doesn't have, you know, for me personally, it didn't have any staying value. I played through it. It was fun. And then that was it. I never really had the desire to pick it up again. Whereas Baldur's Gate 3, something like that, is a game that you will pick up over and over and, you know, want to experience all over again, especially with how many different choice options there are. But in terms of homebrew shenanigans, I found something really cool. Dritz Armory, Weapons of War. Now, this is from the League Games, which is a completely new 5e compatible book. Enter the dark passages of the Forgotten Realms and arm yourself with the weapons of war. This will get you a bunch of weapons and magical items found in the Legend of Dritz saga. You'll find Aegis Fang. You will find Khazad Hea, which we talk about a little bit later in the show. You will find, of course, Twinkle and Icing Death. So definitely check it out. It's only $2 for the PDF. It's got a 4.5-star rating. So a link to that will be in the show notes. That being said, let's jump back to our discussion with Russ. Welcome back. We are sitting here with Russ Johnson. For me personally, the voice of Dritz Dwarden. But we're talking the Legacy of the Drow. And now we have Starless Night up. So, in the opening chapters of this book, Dritz Dwarden departs from Mithril Hall, his heart heavy with the burden of a looming threat from his drow kin in Menzo Berenzin. He feels
well, he
that
thinks it's all his fault.
Right, and that as long as he's there,
right,
everyone's in danger.
Exactly.
Determined to protect his friends at any cost, he embarks on a perilous journey, and along the way, he encounters Elephane, an elf whose life he once saved from a brutal drow raid during his time among his own kind. Now, this was the elf child that Dritz smeared with the elf child's own mother's blood in order to convince his drow brethren that the child was dead. And this was what caused House Dwarden to lose Loth's favor to begin
right.
with, the sparing of this surface elf's life. It's a poignant reminder of the darkness that still lurks in the world. And something makes me think that this will not be the last we see of Elephane.
Dun, dun, dun.
Because I've read the books, that's why I know. Excuse me.
No spoilers.
So Dritz paths once leads him back to Mushi's Grove, a place that he knew once knew well, only to find it inhabited by a majestic unicorn. And this
I almost cried. I almost cried
it's
when I
really,
read that.
That whole part of Dritz's life is, for me, a nice reprieve, a nice respite from pretty much everything else. Every other chapter of his life is this one time where he's able to truly be at peace, not have to be on guard. And I think that's where he really comes into his own as a character, into who he, the kind of person that he wants to be.
Yeah, Mushi will always be one of my very favorite characters in the entire series. I mean, he's the impetus why I called my Discord the Ranger's Grove.
Right.
He is, I guess the irony there is everyone sees Drizzt and judges him. And Mushi knows he's a drow because he's told, but he can't see him. And yeah, he learns so many lessons about just don't judge people and don't think this and don't think that. You've got to learn about people to see who they are. You can't just go into it and say, well, this person's like this.
Right.
Mushi is such an amazingly deep character that Salvatore made. And yeah, when the unicorn popped up in the grove, I was like, oh my gosh, I think I got weepy reading that book. And I was like, I was just so moved because the character, it left such an impact on me. So I was really pleased that he did that.
No, yeah, 100%. I mean, it's the creature's presence adds this air of enchantment to the journey, stirs up memories of a time long past. You know, it's a callback to both Mushi himself as well as Dritz's decision to follow Maliki, who is usually depicted with a unicorn. But no, yeah, I again, it's one of those scenes that almost comes, you know, doesn't fit in the in you know grander view of the book because it's so so nice and so innocent in a book full of violence and death and despair.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
So meanwhile, Catabri, upon learning of Drit's departure, sets out in pursuit, her heart torn between concern for her longtime friend, but also a dawning realization of deeper feelings that she may have for him. Her quest takes her to Silvery Moon, where the wise lady Lustriel offers her guidance and aids in her pursuit. Lustriel is always there to help a drow out. She's always there to help our buddy out.
All right.
As Dritz and Catabri's paths converge, Matron Mother Banray of Menzel Berenzin plots her long-awaited conquest of Mithril Hall, setting the stage for this massive conflict. Soon after, Dritz navigates the treacherous tunnels of the Underdark, utilizing his stealth, his combat prowess, all usual Dritz stuff to both evade and confront various threats. His path finally leads him near the, and I always, my co-host Mary will always tease me because I'll always mispronounce this, Snurfneblin. Snurfneblin?
Sort of Neblin, yeah.
There you go. Snurfneblin city of Blingdenstone, which the Snurfneblin, you know, especially Blingdenstone and especially who we see here in a little bit. Again, a very, very cool respite in the otherwise strife-filled life of Dritz.
Yeah.
Just very nice that he's able to find some folks to care for him and you know think of him as a friend. So he intervenes in a conflict between the deep gnomes and a party of drow, ultimately being overpowered and rendered unconscious in the ensuing skirmish. Simultaneously, Catabri, accompanied by Gwenyver, also descends into the depths of the Underdark in pursuits of Dritz. Encountering a group of goblins that nearly prove fatal, she employs Agatha's mask, which is the same magical device that allowed Artemis Untreri to masquerade as Regis. She employs this to appear as a drow, which is ballsy to say the least.
Yeah.
I don't know that I don't know that I would have been able to do that. I mean it's something that's either going to aid her mission or lead to dire consequences.
Mean, you're right. I mean, she definitely stepped out of her comfort zone in this book, but you know, she had no greater purpose at this point. You know,
Right.
this was losing Wulfgar was already the biggest setback in her life. Not setback may not be the right word, but factor. You know, losing Brunner probably would have devastated her the most. But you know, losing Wulfgar hampered her, and basically Drizzt saying, "Hey, I'm going to go do this," a suicide mission. Just
Right.
what are his chances that he would go to the city of Drow and come out victorious? There's 20,000 drow in that city, and many of them high priests. So he's not going to come out, and she's not going to let it happen, not on her watch. So yeah, you know, she says, "This is what I'm going to do," and it really doesn't matter what I've got to do at this point, because I'm going to do it because I'm Catabri, and don't mess with me. And if this means I've got to put on this persona and sell it, I'm going to do that. And if it blows up in my face, so be it. But I'm not gonna just sit idly by and let things happen.
Like rereading this now after the fact, you obviously when I read it the first time, this movie hadn't come out yet, but rereading it now, it reminded me of that scene in Inglourious Basterds where the English soldier is pretending to be German. And then when they ask for more beers, he holds up his pinky, ring, and middle finger to indicate three instead of his thumb, index finger, and middle finger, the German three.
Yeah.
And that's how the German realized that this guy isn't German. And so, like, now, like, I'm rereading this after having seen that movie, I was like, oh, that's exactly what I was worried about, that she would make some sort of cultural snafu,
Yeah.
something completely innocuous that would reveal herself. And that's exactly what I was worried about that would happen. Thankfully, spoiler alert, Caterbury survives, at least at the end of this book.
Don't ruin it.
And so back in Mithril Hall, Regis has taken the responsibility of preparing the Dwarven army for a potential drow assault, recognizing the imminent threat posed by the Menzoberranzan forces. However, Brunner, still grappling with profound grief and apathy stemming from the loss of his friends, struggles to find motivation and purpose. In Menzoberranzan, the infamous assassin, Artemis Untreri, has been rescued. So, to your point, who's going to find him? Regis thinks the drow. The drow will
Of
find him.
course. But Jarbox.
And he's rescued, and he is subsequently finds himself within the city's confines. As House Ban Ray consolidates its power and allies in preparation for their assault on Mithril Hall, news begins to spread among the drow that the legendary Dritz Duorden is a target eagerly sought by the city's most formidable weapons masters, setting the stage for an inevitable and, of course, epic confrontation. I mean, this. The ultimate, like, the climactic battle scene of this book is, like, I'd say the last 25, the last quarter of it is almost the entire battle scene, which is awesome. It's
It would be amazing if it was ever made into a movie or a
no,
series,
100%.
which is the not to go sidebar, but I don't know how many times I have seen that discussion come up in different kind of threads on Reddit and on Facebook and so forth. How many times, oh, would they make it into a movie? Would they make it into a series? This person would play this character. And I don't know if they ever will, and I'm concerned that they ever will, because it's become like the holy texts at this point, that you can't mess that up. You can't go and make a movie about this story and these characters and not make it like Lord of the Rings, a
Right.
movie on that scale. If you can't do that, then don't do it.
Right. And
So.
to your point, part of me, or part of me is glad that Dritz did not show up in Honor Among Thieves as was the original plan, because at that point,
Really?
that he was supposed to show.
No, I mean, you were disappointed he didn't show up, being like a cameo?
I mean, I didn't want to. I mean, like I said, I didn't want it not to do justice.
Okay.
Like, we get this cast of new characters with,
Right.
new histories, and so you can't do them a disservice because they already just made them up. And so if we do see some sort of live action or even, animated Dritz series or movies, I like you said, I want it to be done right.
I think that they could have done a really, really subtle cameo when they were fighting down there, and he shows up, doesn't really say much, kind of does his thing, and defeats the bad guys, and they kind of look over and they see him, and he just kind of like gives him like a little nod, or Gwen growls or something, real subtle, just enough for people to lose their mind and see, oh my
That's
gosh, Tim, and then he kind of runs off down the
No,
tunnel. But yeah, anyway,
I
that's
mean,
a podcast for a different time.
no,
That
absolutely,
whole concept of a movie
100%.
for that.
So Dritz recuperates at Lindenstone, where he is reunited with his old friend, the deep gnome Belwar Disengulp, with
Most honored borough warden, yeah.
he's I always, every time I think of Belwar, I always think, like, what a hassle it would be to use the bathroom. Like, the poor guy. It's like, you don't think about stuff like that. It's like,
No.
oh man, they chopped off his hands and now he has, tools and weapons for hands. That's cool, being a deep gnome. But you don't think about, well, how does he use the bathroom? Anyway,
No. That's a whole different short story that Salvatore may never write.
We'll leave it up to your imagination. However, this reunion is short-lived as the Drow mercenary Jarlaxle becomes aware of Drit's presence here. And determined to eliminate the perceived threat that Dritz poses, Jarlaxle sends his men to confront him. Meanwhile, Caterbury has arrived in Blingdenstone, accompanied by Gwenyver, whose presence is recognized by the Snurfmelvin. They remember their friend's fancy cat. Acknowledging their friendship with Dritz, the Deep Gnomes allow Caterbury to continue her journey to Menzo Berenzin, and using the enchanted mask to disguise herself as a drow, Caterbury manages to evade suspicion, and upon hearing the sounds of battle indicating Dritz's peril, rushes to his aid. And as the confrontation between Dritz and Jarlaxle's forces intensifies, Caterbury joins the fray, determined to stand by her friend's side against overwhelming odds. Which that was having Caterbury like coming in to save the day, having that sort of that switch. You know, whereas usually it's Dritz saving someone's life, but this time it's Caterbury doing that for him. I love
this
that
was
a lot.
Very much a book that she was probably the star of when all things are looked at.
I looked up the latest printing of it, and she is on the cover. So
she deserves to be.
Absolutely. As opposed to a Caucasian looking Dritz, which is on the original. Which I thought was
no. We won't talk. We don't talk about the Studio 54 Dritz covers. There's no. I can't stand those covers with a little gold head plate thing he's got going on there. Like, I don't know who thought that was a good idea, but no, just lose that artwork.
So while Dritz and Caterbury do find themselves overpowered, they are defeated by the combined forces of both Jarlaxle and Ontrari. Caterbury is kept by Jarlaxle, but Dritz is captured and subjected to brutal torture at the hands of Matron Ban Ray and her minions, who want to extract valuable information about Mithril Hall from him. Which is interesting, because for so long, Dritz's mindset has been like, these people want to kill me. They want to kill me no matter what. And now they have him, and if he dies, that's fine, whatever. But it's not the purpose isn't to kill him just for the sake of killing him. They want information from him, which has got to be sort of confusing for our good friend.
Yeah.
Like, I thought y'all hated me so much that you just wanted to kill me just to kill me, but now you're trying to extract information from me. And so Dritz endures unspeakable torment. Jarlaxle, driven by his own motives, sort of subtly manipulates Ontrari into formulating a plan to rescue Dritz. And with Caterbury's help, they embark on a dangerous mission to infiltrate the Ban Ray compound. The first task is to acquire the spider mask, which is a crucial tool that will grant them access to the heavily guarded compound. Now, the spider mask gives three powers to the wearer. First, it gives them infravision. Second, it gives the wearer complete immunity against webs of all sort. This includes the web spell, the wand of viscous globs. And finally, the third power grants the wearer is that it confers some protection against poison from certain creatures such as spiders.
I like that mask.
And like you said earlier, if they need to get a magical item, well, then Salvatore will write one up for them.
Mm-hmm.
After successfully stealing the mask from the quarters of Grumph Ban Ray, the two allies must then navigate a perilous path through the compound, facing formidable obstacles and enemies at every turn. Like I said, this pretty much takes over the last quarter of the book and is just so much fun to read. It's, we're telling you the plot. These are all spoiler alerts, but by no means should you not read these books. I mean, I reread them to prepare for the episode, and so I knew what was going to happen. I knew exactly what the next page held, but it was still so much fun to read. These are, I can't say enough, so much fun.
Yeah, they are. You're right. It's like a John Wick episode for the last, you're right, 25% of the book.
And so, despite the odds stacked against them, they do manage to reach Dritz's location. only to be confronted by the full force of House Benray's elite warriors. Ultimately, Dritz, Catabri, Gwenyver, and Entreri engage in a desperate battle to escape from the confines of the compound. And as they fight their way through the treacherous tunnels of Menzo Berenzin, they manage to slow down their pursuers by causing a massive stalactite to crash down, blocking off part of the compound and buying them precious time. Amidst all the chaos, Dritz faces off against Dantrag Banray, who is the formidable weapon master of House Banray, in a fierce and intense duel.
It's not just blocking off part of the compound. You got to set the stage on this one. This was something, this was Catabri's almost like coup de grace.
Right.
To
mention yeah.
Benray. You know, they're escaping, they're way up in the ceiling, and she dislodges this giant stalactite that comes crashing down into the beautifully crafted ceiling of the holy room of House Benray when all these matron mothers are there. This amazing force is there, and her ceremony is disrupted because of the stalactite, sending everything into chaos down below. And all because, once again, Catabri, kicking ass and taking names, does what she does best in this book and just says, this is what you get when you mess with me.
And with Dritz's usual skill and determination, he emerges victorious in his duel with Dantrag and gets himself a fun little weapon, a blade, a sword by the, that goes by the name Cutter, which we have actually discussed previously.
Mm-hmm.
It also goes by the name Kazidheya, which we discussed in episode 186. If you want to get a better idea of the history of this sentient weapon, and it definitely comes into play in subsequent books as well. It's a lot of fun. And so as they make their way toward the surface, the companions have a final encounter with Jarlaxle, who then reveals himself as the mastermind behind the events that transpired. However, his motives are a bit mysterious, enigmatic, not really sure what the mercenary has planned. And it leaves Dritz and his friends to ponder the true extent of Jarlaxle's influence and intentions. Emerging into the light of the surface world, the companions part ways with Entreri, who chooses to continue his journey alone. Dritz and Catabri press on to Mithril Hall, where they are warmly welcomed by Regis, now a commander of the Dwarven Army, as well as the Brunner Battlehammer. Reunited with their friends and allies, they continue to face the looming threat of the Drow and to defend Mithril Hall with courage and determination. And that is where we will leave off to discuss the second half of the Legacy of the Drow series. I love it. I think it's great. I always look forward to these episodes where we discuss the Legend of Dritz because it gives me an excuse to reread the books.
Well, you know, it's such a different feel from the first two trilogies, right? I mean, he wrote the Icewind Dale trilogy first.
Right.
And when you read through that and then you read through the Dark Elf trilogy and you compare the writing, and you could see his own growth as a writer and how he is improves, and then you figure how much he's crafted. And now you jump ahead to the, you know, to book seven with Legacy. And it feels so much different. And I remember when I recorded this, I kept, I'm like, my goodness, how many characters is he going to have in this first chapter? Because he just keeps throwing all these characters in. He's like, he's going to have everybody in this book. And he practically does. I mean, there aren't many characters that he's established from the underworld, the Underdark, that don't show up in this book, including, you know, Belwar making his guest appearance. Well, I guess that's more than the second book, but still, it's like this whole quad of books, the foursome here, is a huge feel different than the first two trilogies. And I think that was necessary. You know, the other two felt the way that they did. And now he's grown and you're kind of like, well, what am I going to do? What's the next logical growth for this? And he took it. And I think that this is, some people have told me that when they had messaged me when I was doing Legacy, that they were excited, really excited for this series of books because this is their favorite series. These four
Really?
books. Yeah. And, it's kind of like, wow, all right. Everyone has their favorites, and a lot of people's
I'm a Dark
favorites is,
Elf trilogy guy
yeah, I
myself.
mean, well, for me, that's the OG. That's what I
Right.
go back to. And some of the newer books, people are like, oh, that's the book, blah, 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 blah. I like this one. I like that one. I like this one. But they have their own personalities. The books do, different series in the books. So Salvatore is, he's my favorite fantasy writer. In case it
Nice.
doesn't shown by now.
You could have fooled me. You had mentioned an interesting theory about Dritz,
Yes.
and I want you to share that with the lore cast.
Okay. So, and I've discussed this before with other people and to get varying responses. And it's not, I don't think I'm the only person who has this belief, and it may not be the most common belief, but my interpretation of the creation of that character in Homeland of Drizzt was that this was intentional by Loth. Matron Malice, chapter one, is pregnant and she is about to give birth, and she utilizes all the pain of natural childbirth to unleash this spell that she is reaching out and channeling through Loth. And Loth knew what Loth was doing, and Loth made Drizzt to be different, knowing full well that he was going to challenge all the other dark elves down there because he's not going to be the same. How easy would it be to just make, oh, it's another male drow. He's a fighter.
Right.
Great. But no, he's not just another male drow. He is an exceptional drow. He is unique. He has unparalleled fighting skills. He is alone on who he is. And because of that, he is the perfect agent of chaos for her. At no point is he working directly with or for her. He is his own person. He follows his heart. He follows my leaky. He does not associate with her. But Loth, in my opinion, is responsible for creating him and making him who he is, giving him this sense of morality that he utilizes throughout his life and forces her children, the other drow, to deal with it. And I think that's, I don't know, honestly, if that's even close to what Salvatore had in mind. But that hypothesis, that theory makes sense to me.
No, I
And
like it.
I'm going to stick with that.
I think you're absolutely right. I think in a society and a culture full of chaos, what would be the most chaotic thing? Just
A lawful
drop,
character.
just yeah, drop a bunch of law and goodness into it. And
Goodness.
they have to deal with that, which, in a society where you're always having to look over your shoulder and have to worry about, the dagger coming from every which side, having this agent of chaos, which is actually, someone that is lawful good at the very most, lawful neutral at the very least, would be the most chaotic thing. So yeah, I think it makes a whole lot of sense,
Yeah,
100%.
absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for listening to a couple of old timers ramble on about Dritz. And thank you, Russ, for joining us. Once again, where can we find you? What have you got going on?
Well, I've got my podcast, which you can find it on Spotify and several other streaming locations. It's called Tales from the Ranger's Grove. You can find my Discord server, which is called Ranger's Grove. So instead of having all that myriad of letters and numbers in the long joining for a Discord server, you just have to type in Rangers Grove, all one word. Got a link tree. I think I'll send you the link tree after we're done chatting. You can put it in the text, the notes, the liner notes of the podcast episode. And I've got a few books that are currently available right now on Amazon. One of the ones I'm most proud of was actually written by someone who was a listener of the podcast, a first-time fantasy writer, and he wrote a book called Quadrant of Balance, and it's a pretty cool fantasy novel. And his second book in that series drops on May the 1st, so it's coming up. Daniel Hansen is the author's name, and you could find his books right now on Amazon and a couple other book locations as well. So I'm trying to get out there. We'll see what's happening.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll have links to all that stuff in the show notes. And, you know, if you have any questions, you can reach us at dndlorecast@gmail.com, our Discord, you know, any of the social medias at dndlorecast. If you have any issues finding Russ, find me and I will guide you. I will help you. I'll point you in the right direction 100%. Because like I said, this man is the voice for me. Is the voice of Dritz Jordan forevermore.
And you're very kind.
Couldn't thank you enough for being on the show. Can't wait to have you back so we can finish up this series.
And, can't wait.
Yeah, thank you so much again. And
thank you for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for letting us be a part of your life for the short amount of time. We hope that you come back to the tower for some more lore fun. Fare thee well, dear listener. And until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thank you for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, consider following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at D&D Lorecast, or jumping into the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.com.